It's the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
And welcome in. This is the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web. That's battlegroundstatenews.com, where you can find stories that detail what's going on in the key battleground states looking towards 2020, the states that will determine who fills the White House, who will control the Senate, the House, and really will kind of set the political stage for some critical decisions, including redrawing and gerrymandering state House, state Senate elections, governor's races. A lot on the table for 2020, and Battleground State News intends to help you know what's going on, not just in your state, but around the country in ways that will affect you, your family, and your state. Again, go to battlegroundstatenews.com, battlegroundstatenews.com, and you can also find past episodes of Battleground State Report with the segment there as well. And again, each week it seems like the political turmoil has already started for 2020, Michael, as you know, people are thinking, oh, we just finished the midterm elections. We're still counting results in the midterm elections. And yet 2020 is already here.
2020 is already here. And the reason that we have the Battleground State Report radio program and battlegroundstatenews.com is this simple fact. In America, we elect a president based upon the Electoral College. And each state then basically determines by the winner who gets the Electoral College votes. And you need, 270 Electoral College votes to become the president out of the 538 that are cast. And of the 50 states plus the District of Columbia that have Electoral College votes, 33 states and the District of Columbia, the outcome is we know. These states are going to be red or blue. California is going to be blue.
Go ahead and put it in the column.
Yeah. Oregon, blue. Washington, blue.
Don't even know who the Democrat nominee is, but go ahead and put it in their column.
Tennessee, red.
We expect Donald Trump to be the nominee, but go ahead and put these states into his column.
North Dakota, red. Alabama, red. Mississippi, red, et cetera. Now, what does that mean? It's interesting. How do you run a political campaign, and why are we doing this report? Because what happens in those 17 battleground states that are that could go either red or blue, that's what's going to determine who will be president. And I'm going to run through those states again. We do this each time, but it's important to remember. And each state, you know, each state, they make decisions based upon local issues sometimes. And this program highlights those local issues. The ones that we like to focus on the general area are election integrity, and boy, do we have a lot to cover there. Immigration, school choice. Those are some of the real big issues that we think will be very significant in 2020. But the 17
national security, by the way, can always pop up or down depending on world events. Right now, you have, for example, the gains that President Trump is making in the international trade arena with China blinking, with Canada and Mexico agreeing to a new version of NAFTA. We're seeing the chaos in Europe with Macron under fire in his own country with the yellow vest protesting, with Theresa May having to deal with Brexit. So world events can still change the dynamic. But Americans tend to be isolationist, tend not want to focus on international events unless they're forced to. So that would be one issue area that could 6 months out become the key issue in the campaign. But at this point, you know, the national issues, the international issues seem to be leaning more towards domestic policy controlling what people will be focused on heading into 2020 rather than sort of international issues. Is there a chance, Michael, that there are states that are among the 17 that we're focused on that drop off or that new ones come
yes.
in? Is there movement possible?
There is a possibility of movement, and we talked about this. There are a couple that are not on the list of 17 that might make it. So, for instance, one that we might add, we don't have it as a battleground state right now, Georgia. You know, if Stacey Abrams had won the governor's race there, maybe we'd put it on. I think President Trump won about 9 points last time. Another one, maybe kind of Montana. You would think he won by 17 points, I think, in Montana. But again, they elected a Democrat, John Tester. So our eye is on what's going on in Montana and Georgia. But for now, they're not on the list. Let me tell you the list. We have in the West, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. In the Midwest, Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. In New England, we have Maine and New Hampshire. In the South, Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida. And those are the states that will determine the outcome of the 2020 presidential election.
Virginia is one that I could see possibly moving into the blue column and being moved out of battleground because, again, unless Republicans start stepping up the ground game there, the Democrats, with that population growth, with the left-leaning growth in the D.C. suburbs where all those government bureaucrats work, you have a real battle there to even get back to relevance. And I think the rest of the state is pretty red, but that suburban D.C. area kind of swings it. It's interesting. I was looking at some numbers the other day for New York. I mean, we put that in the solid column. It's a blue state. New York City removed. If you take out the vote margin that Hillary Clinton had in New York City, she won the state of New York by 760 votes. So New York is really a little bit like the country. You take out the California state, you take out the East Coast big urban areas, and there's this big waft of flyover red country. The same thing's true even in some of these blue states where New York City is what swung New York solidly for Hillary. The rest of the state, she only won by 760 votes. Maybe if Republicans will play more in places like California and New York and other states, they can swing some congressional races in their favor.
When we come back, we'll talk about a very strange case of rank voting in Maine, which could have a big impact in 2020.
Like ranking or that it stinks? Or both. Okay.
Both.
We'll talk about that in a moment. This is the Battleground State Report. We're back right after this.
It's the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellen.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. As always, go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web. We'll keep you up to date. GOP operatives in key states are warning that Trump 2020 is slow out of the gate. David Drucker with the Washington Examiner saying they're not organizing, they're not set up. They're slow out of the gate. Keep in mind, I don't think that President Trump had even, you know, gone down that escalator in Trump Tower at this point. But if there is a weakness of this president and this administration, it is putting ground game together. Rallies alone aren't going to do it. And Republicans lost House seats and Senate seats and governor's races because they did not have a ground game in key states. And this ought to be a pretty big red flag to Republicans.
Not only that, you know, the Democrats have been preparing for 2020, even during the middle of 2018, the election November 6th. Ever since then, they've been continuing to push all sorts of insider kind of tricks, shall we say. And particularly as it relates, we have a category at battlegroundstatenews.com on election integrity. There are two elements of election integrity. One is legal cheating, and the other is illegal cheating.
And we're seeing, I guess, legal cheating in North Carolina as they're still fighting over a congressional seat there. It looks like they're going to be able to steal the 8th congressional district.
Ninth
congressional district by the claim that there is some voter misdeeds that took place, not enough to overcome a 900-vote margin, but enough for them to say, oh, we'll just let Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in the House refuse to seat the Republican who won and instead just steal a seat after the election.
Yeah, and it's a big mess because there have been practices in North Carolina in that district for years. Questionable handling of absentee ballots by this guy, McCray Dallas, who is a convicted felon. And do you know where he got his start and for many, many, many years was engaged in these practices? Guess which party he did this with?
I bet he was a Democrat.
He was.
Wow, that's kind of interesting. Over there and now he's applied his trade on
the Republican side. It was fine when he was a Democrat.
So the Democrats know he's a cheater because he was cheating for them for years.
Yeah, and the question is what the scope of that cheating is, and it's very, very much in the weeds. You have to understand all the details of the law. Right now, it doesn't look like they're are 905, Harris, the Republican, won by 905 votes. But all of the efforts there are indicating that they're piling on against him. And it's not
well, and part of it's because the Republicans aren't big fans of his because he beat a Republican incumbent in a primary. So it's tit for tat more than what's actually right. Now, that one's being stolen in Congress, essentially. There's another one that they're trying to steal in the courts up in Maine where that battle is one that's going to be tested maybe in the Supreme Court.
I think that's it. And in fact, again, when you say stolen, it's being legally stolen at present. And why and how that's the case, I'm going to walk you through it, Steve, but your head just might explode.
I'm wearing a plastic sheathing so it won't get the stuff. It's like one of those, what is it, Gallagher, where they slams the watermelons in the front row and
gets
splashed.
Ready.
I think we're in that kind of moment.
Yeah, we are in that moment. But all of this now is legal as a result of earlier this week, a federal judge's decision to declare the rank voting system used for the very first time in American history in Maine in the November 6th election.
Now, how does this rank voting stuff work?
Man, you're just not going to believe this. So let me tell you how it came about. Usually in America, it's one man, one vote, right?
That's what the Constitution requires.
Yes, that's the 14th Amendment requires that. It's been, 230-odd years of practice, essentially. Now, how you do it is, by the way, there's part of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 4. It's called the Elections Clause. It tells you how you're supposed to conduct these elections and who can set the rules. So let me read it to you. Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution, the Election Clause, says, quote, "The times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof."
Our founders really wrote very clearly. They didn't mumble. They didn't mealy-mouth around. The election rules for a particular state will be determined by the state legislature. What's confusing about that?
It's not confusing at all, except we'll get to the rest of the story, and I know this will shock you, but a 2015 decision by the Supreme Court comes to play in this, and it was a 5-4 decision, and the majority opinion was written by Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Well, that tells us kind of that the thumb was on the scales of justice.
Yeah, this thumb was on the scales, and in agreement, concurring with her in that opinion, were Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, Breyer, and Kennedy, the swing vote. And dissenting, Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Alito, Justice Thomas, and Justice Scalia. Now, that happened in 2015. I'll come back to that decision in a bit.
And Kennedy stopped swinging as far to the left when you had Neil Gorsuch join him on the court. If you notice that Kennedy started ruling a bit more with the conservative majority after Gorsuch replaced the deceased Scalia.
And remember that what we have going on there is the following. We now have Justice Kennedy has been replaced on the Supreme Court by his former clerk, now Justice Brett Kavanaugh. So he apparently is going to be more conservative, we think, than Kennedy. So, if that 2015 case, and we'll come back to what that case was, were to be decided again, might be a different outcome.
But you'll have the left arguing stare decisis. You got to stick to the rulings that have already been made unless you can show a reason to distinguish it. But now if we're looking at Maine, we have a case of what they did not intend being put into place, which may give the court an opportunity to say, wait a minute, we now see how this plays out. It doesn't play out to protect one man, one vote.
So, yes. Now, to get into the rank voting system, let me explain it. So, in Maine, now you have a different way of voting for federal office, and it works this following. In the second congressional race, there were four candidates, the Republican, the Democrat, and two independents. And the way it works is the voters were told when you go and you cast your ballot, you need to cast a first choice a second choice, a third choice, and a fourth choice. You with me on this so far?
Correct.
Okay.
So you vote not just who you support, but if they didn't win, who would you support of the remaining candidates?
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So that's how we start. So November 6th, Election Day comes. And the Republican, Bruce Poliquin, receives 2,632 more first-choice votes than the Democrat, Jared Golden, right? So normally, he would be declared the winner, right?
Yeah, he won. He got more votes.
Well, not so fast. The other part of this law says we don't kick in the second, third, and fourth choices until the first-choice winner gets less than 50% of the vote.
So instead of having a runoff, they go by who was the second choice to see if that moves somebody above 50%.
Exactly.
So they would add votes to the columns based upon the second choice.
Well, add some votes. This is where you get into the one man, one vote issue. So what they do is, so first place finisher, the Republican, Poliquin. Second place finisher, the Democrat. They're separated by 1%, 2,632 votes. Third place and fourth place finishers, between them, they have 24,000 votes. So you would think all 24,000 of those votes would somehow be allocated to the first and second place winner, right? Well, here's a little rub on it. Of those 24,000 voters, 8,000 did not select a second, third, or fourth choice.
They just didn't like any of those guys.
Right. They just didn't like them. Guess what happened to their votes?
You don't count those extra votes that didn't vote.
They were thrown out.
They threw out the first place votes?
They threw out every vote.
So wait a minute. So I go and I vote for my guy.
You vote for
your
guy.
But I don't vote for a second, third, or fourth person, and they take away my vote for the guy I preferred?
They take away your vote, period. You don't get to vote for
anybody. So your vote just doesn't count at all because you chose not to vote for the second or third choice.
Exactly. That's how the law in Maine, which was passed by an initiative, we'll come back to that initiative.
So the legislature didn't pass it.
No.
They had a referendum, essentially.
Exactly.
Which isn't what the Constitution says you're supposed to do.
Exactly. More on that when we come back. You're listening to the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy with Steve Gill. Back in a moment.
This is the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy here with you. And if you go to battlegroundstatenews.com, we'll keep you up to date on the news around the 17 battleground states we're focused upon. And I know this whole Maine thing is a bit confusing, so we're trying to walk through it because this may be what the Democrats try to impose in other states to give themselves an edge. They're trying to automatically put felons back in the ability to vote because overwhelmingly about 60-70% of felons will vote for the Democrats. They're trying to bring in more illegal aliens to vote in this country because that helps the Democrats. And this rank voting system, which rank means stink, as well as ranking the votes, it applies in both standards, is another way that Democrats may be able to set up a system where they can legally steal votes, the same way this kind of after the election day harvesting is taking place that they're setting up. Know that they are setting up these procedures in states where they control the legislature, where they control the governor's office, to put themselves in better chances to win in 20.
Exactly right. So if your head hasn't exploded yet. So we're back in Maine trying to explain the rank voting system. And the way it works now is, on Election Day, November 6th, there were four candidates. The Republican got 2,632 more votes, first-choice votes, than the Democrat. And yet, because he was under 50%, he wasn't declared the winner. They implemented for the first time in American history the rank voting system process. And so the Secretary of State, a Democrat, goes through this process where he He looks at all of the votes of the third and fourth place finishers. Now, those people, by the way, those people are not allowed to cast their votes for the first or second voters. They're not allowed to cast their votes, for the third or fourth place finishers in the second round. Their votes have to go to either the first or second place. And so what they do is they go and they look now at their second choice, their third choice, and their fourth choice. But there are about 23,000 voters who cast votes for the third and fourth place finisher. Here's the deal. If they did not pick a second choice, third choice, or fourth choice, guess what? According to the law passed by a 2016 initiative, those votes were thrown out, not counted. Can you believe that?
So, again, they're depriving people of their intended votes.
Yes.
Based upon their not casting their backup votes.
Exactly right. So then the Democrat Secretary of State, using, wait for it, a proprietary algorithm from a vendor. A proprietary.
Like double secret probation.
A proprietary algorithm from an outside vendor selected by the Secretary of State, a Democrat.
Is it his brother-in-law?
Who knows? By the way, they won't allow anybody to go in and examine that algorithm. Okay? So, what they do then is they take, in this case, implementing the law, what they do is they take the paper ballots, they scan them digitally, and then they go through this. They try to create, apparently, a giant Excel sheet. And if voters who voted for the third place finisher and the fourth place finisher, the 14,000 or so of them that picked a second, third, or fourth choice vote, then they allocate those to the first or second place finisher in the November 6th election. I know this will shock you, but 10,000 of those votes from the third place of voters who voted for third place and fourth place finishers who did pick a second, third, or fourth choice. 10,000 of those votes were allocated to the Democrat. 4,000 were allocated to the Republican. And surprise, surprise, guess who won the election?
The Democrat wins because that's how they set it up.
Bing, bing, bing.
If it's this confusing to have to explain it, that seems like it's pretty much anti-democratic in terms of voting.
Oh,
I mean little D, not big D Democrat. It's very pro big D Democratic.
Absolutely.
Voting. But if you're having to explain to voters this kind of a confusing process, then it's not one man, one vote, and it is not a clear, transparent process.
But now let's remember how this all was set up. Remember what the Elections Clause, Article 1 of Section 4 of the Constitution.
That the legislature shall set the terms and conditions of the voting.
But in Maine, it wasn't the legislature. It was, wait for it, an initiative, a referendum, bankrolled almost entirely by a left-wing billionaire out of Houston, Texas.
Who saw this as a way to steal votes legally in Maine.
Exactly. And remember, in Maine, again, a little twist on Maine, they have four electoral college votes, and but they allocate them differently than 48 other states. You know, in 48 other states, it's winner take all. Not in Maine. Two electoral college votes go to the winner of the state overall, but each congressional district gets one electoral
based college on vote. If you won that congressional district.
And in 2016, the state went for Hillary Clinton. The first congressional district went for Hillary Clinton, but the second, where this vote's taking place, the second went to Donald Trump. So he got one electoral college vote.
And it's not just in Maine, because in this state, they figure we can pick up one electoral vote, but then they want to try to transport this into some other states, set up the same rank voting system.
Exactly.
That may be passed by legislatures in other states, but in this state, it was done by referendum.
Yeah. So let's look at this. And why did this billionaire, the guy who was involved in Enron and bailed on Enron before it went down and was never implicated in any legal impropriety, but he's a billionaire from Houston, Texas. Why did he think it might work to have an initiative to introduce this, I would call it a bizarre rank voting system?
Because you had a relatively small number of voters you're trying to influence. It's cheaper to move Maine than it would be to move, say, Texas into this system.
But why why did he think that perhaps a legal challenge to this, since the Constitution pretty clearly says only the state legislature can determine this, why? I just wonder why he thought it might have a chance of working. I'll tell you why. Because the previous year, the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, ruled against the Arizona state legislature in a suit it brought against the Arizona Independent Redistricting Commission about who would set the boundaries for the congressional districts there. You know, that's choosing the time and place of an election and manner of an election. And without citing any particular precedent, Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote in her said the following. She conceded that, quote, direct lawmaking by the people was virtually unknown when the Constitution was drafted in 1787. But, making up law from the Supreme Court seat she holds, our precedent teaches that redistricting is a legislative function to be formed in accordance with the state's prescription for lawmaking, which may include the referendum and the government veto, the governor's veto. The exercise of the initiative, we acknowledge, was not at issue in our prior decisions. In other words, the Constitution doesn't say you can do an initiative.
And their previous decisions didn't deal with the issue.
Exactly. But all the liberals on the court said, oh, yeah, it does. So Chief Justice Roberts, you know, and we've criticized him for his decision in NFIB v. Sebelius that basically called the Obamacare a tax but didn't recognize you couldn't create a tax. A tax had to be created out of the House of Representatives. But listen to what he said. It was really, really, really good dissent. He said, just over a century ago, Arizona became the second state in the Union to ratify the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment transferred power to choose U.S. senators from the legislature of each state to the people thereof. Okay, that's what the 17th Amendment was. Here's what he added. Quote, what chumps. They didn't realize that all they had to do was interpret the constitutional term, the legislature, to mean the people. The court, the majority court, today performs just such a magic trick with the elections clause.
There are other constitutional provisions that if you apply that same approach, that when we talk about the people, we mean Congress, that might kind of twist things a bit. We'll talk about that in just a moment when we come back for more of the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com. We're going to finish up with where this main case heads next when we come back for more of the Battleground State Report in just a moment. Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy here with you. As always, battlegroundstatenews.com, where we'll keep you up to date on all the other news affecting the battleground states. And we'll be right back in a moment.
Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellen.
And welcome back in. As Justice Roberts wrote in his dissent, what chumps, you know, if the terms people and the legislature are absolutely interchangeable based upon the majority ruling written by Ruth Bader Ginsburg, then there are some other provisions of the Constitution that might deserve some reinterpretation, like the Second Amendment. Now, the Second Amendment provides that, quote, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, that's been interpreted to mean that the individual people have a right to bear arms to protect themselves. But if you're going to apply the Ruth Bader Ginsburg argument and people and legislature are interchangeable, then actually the Second Amendment only gives members of Congress the right to bear arms. There can only be 435 armed people in America if you believe Ruth Bader Ginsburg has the slightest clue what she's talking about, which is the best indication that she doesn't.
Well, and this is the general problem we've had for well over 100 years, and that is how do you interpret the Constitution? Are you an originalist and you interpret the Constitution based upon the plain meaning of the words at the time they were written? Or do you want to have it living and moving as to what you think is should be right now?
You mean like Alice in Wonderland, a word means what I say it means, yeah. Not what it actually does mean?
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, Chief Justice Roberts really hit that home. He said, yeah, they knew the difference between a legislature and the people. And they explicitly said the legislator. That's a very specific body. That's who gets to make these decisions. But the living constitutionalist on the Supreme Court, 5-4, said, no, not in this case.
The question is whether it will be proceeding to the U.S. Supreme Court, whether it will be interpreted by the Supreme Court, whether they will take this case on or say, nope, we got a prior ruling, we can't overturn it.
So here's what happened. So Bruce Poliquin, the incumbent Republican in Congress from Maine's 2nd District. By the way, since he has been deemed to have lost this race, guess how many Republican members of the House of Representatives there are in the 116th session of the Congress that convenes in January from the 6 states that comprise New England, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. Guess how many?
Poliquin was, I think, the last one, wasn't he?
That's right.
So there will be zero.
Zero. Zero. Okay. And you can thank rank voting for that. So Poliquin obviously said, well, there's, by the way,
by the same Democratic Party that created gerrymandering to keep themselves
yes.
in power against the will of the people, now finding another way to keep themselves in power against the will of the actual voters.
It's called rank voting. And so in this particular case, Poliquin says, you know, look, this is a violation of not only the elections clause, it's also a violation of the 14th Amendment, one person, one vote. Because 8,000 people didn't get their vote counted. Well, so he files a lawsuit. Now, he files it in the federal district court in Maine. The judge there, okay, appointed by President Trump. So you would think would be an originalist, right? That's what you would think. Not so fast.
But that's assuming that the General Attorney General Sessions Justice Department vetted the judges that were recommended to Donald Trump in a way to determine whether or not they were constitutionalist or just flaming liberals.
Yeah, well, here's what you might call a clue, okay? So it's Judge Lance Walker. He was nominated to the federal judiciary by President Trump in April of this year, April. And guess who nominated him? Senator Susan Collins.
Of Maine, yes.
Of Maine, recommended. And the independent senator from Maine, Senator Angus King.
Who caucuses with the Democrats.
Yeah.
So you've got a Democrat senator and a quasi-Democrat senator in Republican in name only, Susan Collins.
Although, let's give her a tip of the hat. She did a fantastic job defending Brett Kavanaugh. So, I mean, we'll give her that. But
it's the other reason that a 53-47 majority that should have been a 55-45 majority if Republicans had won in Montana and Arizona, as they should have.
Yep.
But Collins had power because she was one vote difference in majority or not majority.
Exactly right. So the president's going to pay attention to her recommendations. So this guy, Lance Walker, is the judge who reviews this case. So he looks at the case and he rejects the argument.
He follows the Supreme Court ruling.
He does.
Because as a trial judge, he has an obligation to follow the Supreme Court ruling. So it moves up next to the Court of Appeals, where they have a little bit more latitude.
Well, so let's follow through. So now, if you read his opinion, it's very clear this guy it despises Poliquin and his argument. Not only does he reject it on First Amendment grounds, on election clause grounds, citing the very bad 2015 decision that the living constitutionalists on the Supreme Court won 5-4, he also rejects it on 14th Amendment grounds.
Which wasn't determined in that prior Supreme Court case.
Was not, and that's the one person, one vote. But he doesn't really address the fact that 8,000 people just didn't get their votes counted.
Well, and that's where, as this moves ahead, I do have some confidence that at the Court of Appeals level, they can hang their head on the one man, one vote and find their way around that Supreme Court decision on the elections clause. They can make it a one man, one vote decision that then gets it to the Supreme Court. And again, the new 5-4 conservative majority in the court could overturn the ranked voting, keeping in place the previous Supreme Court and say, well, we don't have to get to that question. We can get to the right answer based simply on one man, one vote.
And the state legislature.
I know we're in the weeds on this.
We are in the weeds, but it's actually
pretty. That's why you have a lawyer on the show.
That's right. But you know, I think it's a good point that you make that if the state legislature said, let's do ranked voting, okay, that's in compliance with the Elections Clause. But let's go back to this. What was the term you used for the precedent? Stare decisis. So.
You can charge more if you throw out Latin phrases as a lawyer.
But that precedent says if this case had come up, say, in 2014, before this groundbreaking Supreme Court decision that essentially, you know, reinterpreted the Elections Clause of the Constitution, if this case had come up in 2014, there would be no particular precedent on it. To cite, and therefore the district court judge would have said, no, can't do that.
You still have an opportunity, I think, and again, without going deep into the cases, you may be able to distinguish the Arizona situation from the ranked voting situation, even under the Elections Clause. Again, it's going to take some creativity by the court, but they could find a way to avoid the precedent that case.
Yeah.
But more importantly, I think they can say, look, you know, we don't even have to get to that question.
Yeah.
This violates one man, one vote. We reject it on that basis. And even if the legislature goes in and adopts the same law, regardless of what the referendum process versus the legislative process, if they find it's a one man, one vote issue, then they can overturn it even if legislators decide to start following this.
And I suppose you could say, in terms of getting around the precedent, that earlier 2015 case, the Arizona State Legislature versus the Arizona Redistricting Commission, that was really just about gerrymandering, not the method of voting, not, you know, one man, one vote, not the standard way people vote or the rank voting. So I suppose you could do that. But I think what you're saying is that although that this judge looking at that issue would say, well, based upon the 2015 precedent from the Supreme Court, as bad as that decision was, he wouldn't insert that, of course, but he would say, yeah, you'd have to overcome that bad ruling.
Yeah, but the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court could just say, no, we don't even have to get to that part of the question.
Yeah.
This determines the issue. One man, one vote is violated. I don't care if you go back and have a referendum or the legislature passes this. Either way you do this, it's wrong. It's unconstitutional. And that may be where we end up.
Maybe. So, but Poliquin may or may not appeal it. He should. He should force this issue because otherwise you're going to see initiatives all over the place trying to introduce rank voting.
And again, if they follow it through a legislative process in states where they control the state house, the state senate, and the governor's race, they can jam this sort of thing through in other states that, again, will have to be challenged and tested after the 2020 election rather than before the 2020
election.
Exactly.
But a billionaire from Texas can have more easily pass a change in the voting methodology into this rank voting system via initiative then through the state legislature. And that's sort of, this guy's a smart guy, this John Arnold guy. He saw this right away and he said, okay. And that's why he started with Maine. It's a small state. Oh, I can, you know, I can do an initiative in Maine. And so they'll go small state by small
state.
The
New Hampshire's, the Vermont's, the small population but carry the electoral votes, New Mexico.
In particular, let's go back to our theme. You know, the next states where they're going to try the initiative process to change the way the Electoral College votes, probably New Hampshire, small state, New Mexico. Yeah, they look at it there as well. Might even do Nevada, Colorado. I mean, there are a lot of states where you can see the outcome.
Well, in Colorado, they now control the state house, the state senate, and the governor's office. So, again, those are states where you can do it.
You can do the legislature. Or the initiative side, you know, in this particular case, if they apply ranked voting to presidential elections, and if they had done this in 2016, instead of a 3 votes for Hillary and 1 for President Trump, all 4 of them would have gone to Hillary. Now, if, you know, as it turned out, it was, 306 votes to 232, and it wasn't that.
20 could be closer, though.
20 is going to be closer.
And 24 with other candidates could be close as well. This is a long-term
play. One Electoral College vote could make the difference, as tight as it's going to be. Because if you look at these 17 battleground states, you know, let's take a look at, you know, how big was the margin in these? Pennsylvania was, you know, what, 100,000 votes. Wisconsin was, 60,000. Florida was, 100,000. Minnesota, which Hillary won, a battleground state, was 40,000. So, these races are going to be very, very close, I think, again, in 2020. And if you just wiggle it on the margin, you could have an impact. And that's what the Democrats are doing consistently that the Republicans aren't doing, right? They are really burrowing in on every element of election law. All the peculiarities of each particular state, legal and illegal. They have like teams of people, teams of lawyers, hordes of lawyers, gluts of lawyers working to figure out how can we game this system to the advantage of the Democrats.
Which gets back to what we mentioned earlier, a Washington Examiner story this week, David Drucker writing that Republicans in a lot of these battleground states are concerned that the Trump campaign for 2020 is slow out of the gate. The Democrats are playing. They're looking at strategy. They're looking at ground game. They're looking at fundraising. And if the Trump team falls behind, both in organization and operation and fundraising, then 20 is a lot closer and a lot tighter than it should be.
Exactly. And you've got, in terms of organizational activities for the Trump team, you got two things going on. You got the ground game, which is, typical stuff, right? You're right. Relying upon a Trump rally by itself is not going to be enough. You got to do more actual organizing, more door-to-door type stuff, more of that. But on election lawfare, the Democrats are way ahead everywhere.
As we saw down in Florida. With the governor's race.
That's
and the
exactly
Senate
right.
race there.
And we'll talk about Florida and other battleground states next week on the Battleground State Report.
You have a great week. Man, it is the end of the year, but that doesn't mean the end of politics. So stick right here and go to battlegroundstatenews.com to keep up to date.